Hit it. Where's Waldo? Where's Waldo? Did you see him? Where's Waldo? Where's Waldo? Did you see him, huh? Where's Waldo?
Pilgrim's Academy was my chance to start over. None of the kids in my new school knew that I had been third grade famous for my Woody Woodpecker impersonation, or that Queen Popular Sarah I had caught me picking my nose in fifth grade science class. Nobody had heard about the time Kevin Harris pushed me off my porch and broke my arm. Nobody even knew who Kevin Harris was. I was safe. I've never asked my parents precisely why they decided I should go away to a private middle school. I think they believed that I was too smart for the public school system, and that's why my grades had been dropping. It couldn't have been because I was bored with the facts that the teachers mumbled and terrified of the small humans who were supposed to be my peers. Whatever the reason, I'm mostly grateful. I've heard the stories about what happened during my 2-year absence from the public education system. Group showers, rat tails, stabbings, a pregnant girl, LSD. The most exciting thing I can remember from my 2 years at Pilgrim's was when the Latin teacher had a nervous breakdown between third and fourth period and stormed out of her classroom yelling that my friend Scott and I were trying to destroy her and her teaching curricula. That night, she called our parents and the parents of a few of our classmates and told them how ill-behaved and dangerous we were. After a brief investigation into our third and fourth period activities, the highlight of third period being that my teacher failed to collect the homework I didn't do, and the highlight of fourth period being that nobody blamed me for the fart somebody dropped in the dark room, the headmaster issued a written and verbal apology to all the children and parents involved, and the Latin teacher was demoted to assistant librarian. It was during the Pilgrim's year that I first fell in love with the idea of Jennifer. Long, brown hair, green eyes, nose that wrinkled pleasantly when she laughed at my stupid, stupid jokes. After voluntarily going to a couple of her cello recitals and convincing her to tutor me in science, I finally got the courage to ask her out and was stunned when she said, "Yeah." I was less stunned when she dumped me 4 days later, confessing that she'd only really gone out with me because she wanted to make out with my supposed best friend, Scott, and he hadn't noticed her at all until she started tongue-kissing me during lunch. I'd like to say I spent the rest of the year shunning both my treacherous friend and my one true love, Jennifer, but I didn't. I continued to worship my ex-best friend's new girlfriend and pretended not to hate Scott for his betrayal. After all, they were my best friends. Unlike public school friendships, private school friendships are hindered by distance. No one in my school lived in the same neighborhood that I did. Only two of them lived in the same town, and neither of them were really close friends. So, during my school vacations, I stayed home alone and began my affair with computers, typing elaborate fantasy stories and some of the worst rhyming couplets recorded by 20th century man. I became really good at top-of-the-line games like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego and King's Quest IV. During my spring break, which did not correspond with the public school's February and April vacations, I spent some time at the doctor's office where my mother worked, and riding in my father's work truck eating sandwiches while he fixed electrical wires and telephone poles. On the third day with my father, I ate a runny grilled cheese sandwich that had decided that, since it had burned away all the skin at the top of my mouth and the back of my throat, it was more than up for the challenge of destroying my colon. Despite my lifelong dislike of public restrooms, I had no choice but to run into the restroom that the linemen shared at their garage office and purge my body of this greasy affront to cheesedom. I knew this was going to be a multiple-part bowel movement. At least a 3-minute project, unfortunately. I'd left my copy of The Two Towers in my dad's truck, and the only thing in the stall with me was a Wall Street Journal. I picked it up, and out fell a glossy magazine with a scantily clad woman. Club. I was ready to put the magazine back within the pages of the newspaper. I'd read through my father's Playboys and hadn't found anything interesting aside from the joke section. Slim women with large breasts leaning over cars or kneeling on beaches didn't do it for me. But the woman on the cover was not like the woman in my dad's Playboys. She didn't look like the kind of girl who liked long walks on the beach and dreamed of curing cancer or becoming a doctor. This wide-hipped, huge-nippled goddess had probably dropped out of high school after her third abortion and decided that stripping only provided temporary fame, while posing for porn meant that her 19-year-old pussy would live forever. I flipped the page. I marveled at the way she squatted to the ground, a whip held tight in her teeth. In the background was a bright red motorcycle. And beneath her was a huge cock. Sure enough, the next page showed her leaning over the motorcycle while a guy in a visored helmet and nothing else pointed his cock in the direction of her mammoth ass. My butt clenched. I leaned over and checked the room for a pair of feet. I was alone. I folded the magazine back into the Wall Street Journal, ran it out to my father's truck, and zipped it into my backpack. On the ride home from work, I became convinced that we were going to be in a terrible accident. Both of us killed by a tractor trailer speeding down the wrong side of the highway. When my mom came to identify the bodies and collect our things, she'd tell the nurse how sweet I'd been, how I'd never cried as a baby, and how I was so smart that I'd been attending private school. And when she got home and started leafing through my backpack, she'd cry a bit at my tattered Tolkien. She'd cluck her tongue at the blank sheet of graph paper in my algebra book. I was supposed to have finished my homework that afternoon. And then she'd see the Wall Street Journal and marvel at what an intelligent boy she was raising. Until the porno fell out, at which point she'd realize what a complete sexual deviant I was, and she'd cut me out of all the old family photographs. Luckily for my family, there was no terrible accident between my dad's work and our house. Ran upstairs the moment we got home and stuffed the magazine under my mattress. During dinner, I realized that my father kept his porn between the mattress, so clearly my mother would know that that's the first place to check for those kind of things. I asked to be excused. I ran back upstairs and began frantically looking around the room. The desk was out, as I'd known for years that my mother liked to go through all of my drawers while I was at school. I couldn't hide it in the closet, because my mom had once found a frog I'd been keeping in a shoebox in my closet, and she dug through it once a week ever since. Under the gerbil cage! Perfect! I hid the magazine and returned to dinner. After dinner, I leisurely watched 4 minutes of TV before heading back to my room. Under the gerbil cage was a terrible idea! What if my mother decided to clean the cage while I played with my friends, or what if Rhoda or Ralph, the gerbils, decided to make a bigger nest and moved enough wood chips out of the way to expose the magazine's glossy cover. Doom! I decided that under the mattress was the best I could do for the moment and decided to go to bed early to protect it. The next day, my parents let me stay home. I searched the basement for an appropriate hiding place for my new treasure. Under the carpet? Inside the jacket of my old Mouser size record. Every possible spot seemed too conspicuous. The magazine was just too thick. There was no safe place for it. I was a wreck. There were only 4 hours before my parents came back from work, and I had no idea what to do with it. I had a small heart attack when the phone rang, and my mom asked me what I was doing. Playing Nintendo? My hands were shaking. Okay, hon. See you soon. Soon? Oh, God, not soon. Anything but soon. I had to do something. Something must be done. Drastic measures needed to be taken, and that's when it hit me. I didn't need the entire magazine. Most of the articles didn't make sense to me, and I had no use for the pictures of just women. I ran up to my room, took out a pair of scissors and cut out my favorite 15 pages of the magazine, which I tucked in the cover of my Where's Waldo books. Then, I brought the rest of the magazine downstairs, tore it into tiny pieces, and used it to start a fire in our charcoal grill. After about 20 minutes, there was nothing left of the magazine but ashes and my 15 favorite pages. But what if my mom picked up the Waldo books while she was dusting and the pictures fell out? I went into the basement, swiped a roll of my father's duct tape, and duct taped the top of each page on the inside covers of all four of the Waldo books, so that they were secure in the book, but I could still flip them over to see the other side of the pages. I was clearly well on my way to becoming a criminal mastermind. I longed to tell someone about my evil genius, but who? Jennifer would be grossed out. Scott was treacherous scum. I couldn't risk showing the Waldo books to the other kids in school, lest a teacher discover my secret. Kevin! Kevin would appreciate my burgeoning life of crime. I tossed my Waldo books into my backpack and walked down the street to his house and knocked on his door. He was in his room, playing Ninja Gaiden with Jeremy. When we were done being transfixed by the game's cutting-edge graphics, I opened up my backpack and made them both swear not to tell anyone about what I was going to show them. A week later, every kid in my neighborhood had borrowed my Where's Waldo books. When they were safely back on my bookshelf, I breathed for the first time in 4 days. No one had been caught. By now, school was back in session and life had returned to passably normal. I kept my Where's Waldo books in my backpack at all times. Nobody at school knew I had them, and there was never a moment when my mom would stumble upon them while she was cleaning. On a Saturday night that seemed as docile and soothing as any Saturday night, my parents invited Jeremy Burdick's parents over for dinner and drinks. I knew that Mr. Burdick and my father worked together, but I didn't know they were friends, and I'd never seen Mrs. Burdick out of their house before. After dinner, while the adults sat on the porch drinking cocktails and telling stories, Jeremy and I went into the basement to play Kid Icarus. I had just been turned into an eggplant when my mother opened the door to the basement. "Hun?" she asked. "Yeah, Mom?" "We're getting a little bored of playing cards up here. We were wondering if you'd mind going up to your room and bringing us a couple of your Waldo books. We want to see who can find him the fastest." My eyes exploded out of my head. Sure. I ran upstairs and tore all the pictures out of the book, leaving noticeable rips. I asked Jeremy to fold up the evidence and hide them somewhere. Crisis averted. I went back down to the basement and tried to de-eggplant myself. Jeremy came down a minute later. "Where did you put them?" I asked. He smiled. "I'll tell you later. Your parents might be listening." We played the game a few minutes longer, and then he said, "How come all the pictures in that book had guys in them? You gay?" I paused the game. "They had girls in them, too." "Fag," Jeremy said, and then he went upstairs and told his parents he wanted to go home. After he left, I scoured my room for my pictures, and when I didn't find them, I knew that Jeremy had taken them home with him. Oh, well. I hoped his parents found them and grounded him for life. When school let out for the summer, I was left virtually friendless. All my private school friends trotted off to Europe or South America. I wanted nothing to do with Jeremy, which I assumed meant I wouldn't be spending any time with Kevin either. I was wrong. At the end of June, Mr. Harris was offered a job in Louisiana. Kevin's sister Erica had just graduated from high school and was spending her summer backpacking the Appalachian Trail. Kevin didn't want to spend 3 weeks in a strange state with only his parents for company, and his sister had no interest in having her 12-year-old brother tagging along on her camping trip. Apparently, camping was a more private affair than an orgy. Since he didn't seem to have any alternatives that wouldn't flop him into depression, my parents invited Kevin to stay with us until his parents got back. After he'd spread his sleeping bag on my bedroom floor, he said, I heard Bergdick's parents found out about your Waldo books and told your parents. I laughed at this new nickname for Jeremy. So obvious, why hadn't I thought of it? Yeah, but I tore the pictures out of the books before my parents got a chance to look for them. Sweet dude! Where'd you put them? I think Bergdick stole them. What a loser, Kevin said. I can't believe we used to hang out with that baby. So Jeremy Bergdick became our punchline punching bag, the stealing, crying, faggy baby who listened to Milli Vanilli and jerked off to professional wrestling. Kevin and I still watch the pay-per-view events, but only because my family had a black box and we wanted to prove that we knew it was fake. We didn't watch the weekly shows or really care about wrestling at all. We cared about biking and girls and baseball and Nintendo. On his fourth day as a member of our family, while my parents were off at their respective jobs, Kevin put in the Nintendo baseball game and challenged me to a game. I'm gonna kick your ass, faggot! You wish, homo, I said. I rule at this game. Bet you $10 I win! I smushed up my face. I don't have $10. This was a lie. I was a paperboy who hid half my tips from my parents in order to buy soda and the candy that they refused to buy for me. Kevin smushed his face in a mirror image of mine. Okay, then. Every time one of us hits a home run, the other person has to do something stupid. What? I asked. Like, hang out with Bergdick? No, like, I don't know. Stand on your head for a minute? Okay. I hit the first home run in the second inning. You gotta run outside and shout, I love sucking Jeremy Bergdick's tiny little cock! You're an asshole, Kevin said, but he did as he was dared and was lucky that nobody appeared to be within auditory range when he shouted it. In the third inning, Kevin hit his first home run. Okay, you have to take off your pants, put your hand in one of your wrinkles dogs, and make it give you a blowjob. He wanted me to stick my dick in the mouth of a puppet and pretend it was giving me a blowjob? For how long? I asked. A minute! We went back and forth for most of the game. It seemed we averaged 2 or 3 home runs an inning. He had to pretend he was getting fucked by a light switch. I had to put a harmonica in my butt and run around the room. He had to play the rest of the game naked. I had to tie a ribbon around my balls. During the 7th inning, fearing that the next dare might involve touching, I told Kevin I was bored and didn't want to play anymore. So, the two of us went upstairs and watched Ren and Stimpy until my mother came home. Have you two been watching TV all day? She asked. It's time to do something productive. Let's go upstairs and clean the gerbil cages. I don't think you've cleaned it in months. Up the stairs, we trudged behind my mother. I grabbed Rhoda, Ralph, and the babies that my mother had let me keep and put each one of them in the Habitrail tubes they liked to play in. I picked out the wheel and all the plastic toys and laid them out on my desk. Then I put my arms around the terrarium and picked it up. And there, in the spot where the terrarium had been, were 15 pages of a big-nippled goddess squatting over, licking, and otherwise making good use of a huge cock attached to a bronzed man in a visored helmet. Kevin let out a sharp laugh. Ha ha! Busted! Second ever podcast of the Safe Mode Journals from CrookedTreehouse.com. This episode was entitled Where's Waldo? And it was brought to you by tall nerds in blue jeans and red and white striped shirts, torturing me since 1992. The opening credits were the theme to the 1990s cartoon show Where's Waldo by Jeff Barry. The outro, which you're listening to right now, is by the Isley Brothers, featuring P.S. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me at insafemode@gmail.com. If you have answers, please also email me at insafemode@gmail.com. unsafemode@gmail.com. I've been looking them for a very, very, very long time.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, where you been?
Baby, didn't you get my two-way? I was with my girlfriend.
You a lie. I called Keisha and Tanya and they were both at home.
But I didn't say them though.
But they're the only friends I know. Girl, you better
wait before you get all upset. Here's the truth.
Talk to me.
I was with my girl when she got some bad news.
And
her man cheated, had her upset and confused.
But baby, what's that got to do? What you coming in at?
She was so upset, she asked me to stay with her.
Well, why didn't you just pick up the phone and call me?
I was gonna do that, but it slipped my mind. I'm sorry, but I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah, well, I got something for you. Tell me, what's her name?
Sharon.
Where does she live? Her man's name.
Billy.
She got kids.
I think one or two.
She got kids.
Baby, yes, no.
That's one thing I gotta know. How the hell is she a friend? If you don't know, upstairs, pack your bags, while you at it, call a cab, it's obvious, you're playing around, go upstairs and get your,